yeah. Say hello to the bad guy, bad guy. The good guy coming last place, last place. Smell that dope when I pass by. I let my money at a fast pace.
All right, welcome to Say Hello to the Bad Guy. I'm your host, Locke, and this is the podcast where we drink, smoke, and bullshit about the life of a historic criminal. Now we're talking outlaws and gangsters. We're not going to cover too many serial killers. That's just a little bit dark for me, and this ain't no true crime podcast. Honestly, you can't call this a history podcast because I'm no historian. I'm just a history fan that does some research and bullshits about it with his friends. So speaking of my friends, let me introduce you to my co-host. First with us today, we got Tank.
Happy New Year, y'all.
And then next with us today, we got Dan.
Ahoy, hoy. Did you know originally when Graham Bell invented the telephone, he wanted ahoy to really be how you answered the phone?
As opposed to hello?
Well, that's interesting because before hello became the standard phone thing, people did not say hello. That was not a common thing. I mean, people at home fact check. This is one of those like YouTube weird things that I learned. I forget what people said, but like they would always like tip their hat, say like, "Good afternoon, good morning." Like the
good day, sir.
For like it wasn't until the invention of the telephone that hello became like the proper thing, and he wanted ahoy.
So today we have a first. We have a mixed drink prepared by our resident beerologist. Turn mixologist. So Tank made us a fucking drink. You wanna roll this out?
Yeah, man. We got a White Russian starring the Spalding's coffee liquor. We got some plain old Seagram's vodka and some half and half.
Because we didn't have the whipping cream.
I do it on a one and a half. So 1.5 shots of coffee liquor, half a shot of vodka, and 3/4 shot of cream, or in this case half and half. And then you just stir it. You can shake it up, pour it out. It's delicious. I mean, I've had a couple brews, so everything tastes delicious, but it's delicious. I drink it for the last couple weeks because Lorraine McLean made us some on an episode before, and now this is one of my Goku cocktails.
Yes. It makes you feel like going super saiyan
and shit. It's one of my go-to cocktails now, so thank you, Lorraine. And, what do you guys think, man? You guys think I got the ratios all right?
I think it came out really good. I actually think I don't mind the half and half because I'm not a big cream fan anyways.
So okay.
I think it's pretty good. But, yeah, I think you fucking crushed it. It doesn't taste a little too – I'm not a big clear liquor fan, so it's not too boozy.
I started with an equal mix of coffee liquor and vodka, but then I chilled back on the vodka because at the end of the day, like, I want to taste my drinks and – like, this just tasted more coffee-ish and, like, delicious to me when I chilled back on some of the vodka. So.
Well, see, as a big Lebowski guy, I've always heard of the White Russians. It's always been a thing. Never had one. This is my first one.
Is it?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. All right.
It's fucking good.
All right.
Well, I will say this. You had your first White Russian with Spalding's. If you look at their website and you look it up, it says it makes the best White Russian you'll ever drink. So you might have went backwards, man. Like, you're going to drink that. Like, you're going to go to a bar or something one time, and you're going to get one, and they're going to make it with Kahlua.
Yeah.
And you're going to be like,
now you got me hooked. I'm going to be chasing the dragon.
It's wild.
You ruined my life now.
I'm sorry, man. I hate to get a side story in on this mix, but we went over to my aunt's house for Christmas, and I said something about having a White Russian. Let me whip you up one. And, she dug the fuck out of it, too, man. She said that it was better than the Kahlua ones, and, you know, hey, pop my fucking collar or whatever. I mean, I'll take it, right?
Pop your overall suspenders.
So support for Say Hello to the Bad Guy is brought to you by Manscaped, who's the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. They offer precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. And Manscaped just launched their fourth-generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 4.0. Join over 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code BADGUY at manscaped.com. We all got the performance kits. You guys all got your kits, right? I ask that every show. I know you guys got them. Now, so my bad. But yeah, it's if you get the performance kit, that's like the Cadillac package. You get the Lawnmower 4.0. You get the Weed Whacker ear and nose trimmer. You get the Crop Reviver, the Crop Preserver, which is all both like ball deodorants. Comes with like a travel case.
Underwear.
Yeah, anti-chafing underwear.
And some the fake newspapers that turns out they're mats. So that you put them on the ground, collect all your pubes,
yep.
Throw it out.
Nice yep. Little shaving mat and shit.
Yep.
But yeah, I gave my balls a little spritz coming out the shower today. So I named my nuts Andre 3000 and Big Boy because they are fresh and so clean, clean.
Hey, and I would say that if nothing else, if you know the 4.0, it's a little bit over the top for you. You know what I mean? You just go into 70s jungles bush. At least get the fucking crop preserver and the crop reviver.
There you go.
Freshen your shit up a little bit. And then they have a whole like suite of products. So they got lip balm. They got foot deodorant.
All the standard toiletries.
Yeah, anything you want, regular face trimmers. And anything you go and get, use the promo code bad guy and it helps the podcast. So you don't got to go get the, you know, lawnmower 4.0. Oh, they got the man wipes. Those are real good too. Yeah. So get 20% off and free shipping with the code bad guy at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code bad guy. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. Before we get started, I want to make sure we take the time to thank Sixfold Sueno for letting us use his music in the intro. Got to thank Cancer for letting us use his song in the mid-roll. You can follow them both on Instagram, Sixfold Sueno, F-O-E. And Cancer is at Cancer the God. The E is a 3. You can follow us on both Instagram and TikTok at Bad Guy Podcast and on Twitter at The Bad Guy Pod. And then if you can't find any of them, you go to badguypodcast.com and everything's on there. We also got a YouTube channel you could subscribe to. We got a Facebook. You say hello to The Bad Guy Podcast. So whatever social media you're on, we're there. But so today, the bad guy we're covering is Stephanie St. Clair.
This ain't negotiation time. This is Scarface, final scene, fucking bazookas under each arm. Say hello to my little friend.
Ooh, it's the lady.
So we got Stephanie St. Clair, a.k.a. Queenie, a.k.a. Madam Queen, a.k.a. Madam St. Clair is what that should have said. I fucked up my PowerPoint.
Well, is Madam St. Clair really an AKA, or is that just another way
of saying
saying Miss St. Clair?
Right. True that. Well, and I guess we'll kind of have to go with this episode will be the first one. We'll just kind of run it out there, I guess, with a trigger warning at the beginning. We'll kind of, I guess, touch on some subjects that we don't typically do on the show. I mean, it should be fine.
Oh, I was wondering what the trigger warning was going to be about. Is there some bestiality that happens? Or
it'd be like some sexual abuse. I mean, I keep that kind of, I won't get into it, but it's part of the story that you have to include.
All right.
We usually stay away from shit like that, but it's history. So Stephanie St. Clair was born December 24th, 1897 in the French West Indies. She was of mixed African descent. She was born on an island called Guadeloupe. When she got older, she would claim she was from Martinique, or sometimes she would say she was actually from France, but she was from Guadeloupe. And
one syllable away from being the Virgin Mary.
Yeah. So she was African, but growing up in Guadeloupe, French was the primary language, so she grew up speaking French. She was raised by a single mother who worked hard to get her a good education. But at the age of 13, her mom got very sick, and she had to drop out of school to take care of her. So she got a job as a housekeeper at like a rich French people's house. And then when she was working there, the family's son would sexually abuse her and rape her like regularly. But then she would just deal with it because she needed the job because she was taking care of her mom.
Yeah, because she claimed rape or whatever. That just means you lost a job and that's it.
So after her mom passed away, she decided to travel to Quebec. And then from there, she immigrated to America, arriving in New York in 1912. So, I mean, I guess it'd probably be clear to see why she would want to get out of that area. So she basically hung out long enough to take care of her mom. And then she was on her own from 13 years old, basically, and just said, fuck it. I'm a hoof it to these Americas everybody's talking about.
You can't take a sick ma from the West Indies all the way up to fucking Quebec or wherever you can make it into the country at that point in time. So I mean, that's admirable what she did. You know, I mean, unfortunately, that crazy part about having to deal with the abuse, but being able to handle it until my pass and then making it to a whole fucking different world. That's wild, man. No matter what age she did it at, that's crazy.
So she went to Quebec because since she was coming from like a French province, it was easier to go to Montreal from there. She was able to take both the extended time between traveling and then quarantining, trying to get into America. She used that time to teach herself English. And then she actually ended up teaching herself Spanish eventually also.
So at this point, she knows like at least 3 to 4 languages. That's fucking impressive.
When she arrives in New York in 1912, she was tall, she's tough, she's charismatic. The quote said she carried herself with a mysterious aura. So she's kind of a badass. She's a good-looking girl. Her first boyfriend was a small-time crook named Duke. And then, so she fell in love with him. And then that relationship ended after he tried to pimp her out. And she stabbed him in the eye with a fork.
Fucking hey.
I mean, it's one way to end it.
That'll end a relationship like a motherfucker. Like, yeah. I want to put you on the corner. Well, I'm going to take out that eye.
Yeah. No. I mean, not to make light of it, but I've been through that before, motherfucker. That ain't why I came here. You know, fucking stabbed in the motherfucking eye, bitch.
Hey, girl, I say, how about you sell that pussy? Counter offer. How about I stab you in the fucking eyeball?
Damn straight. No mom to take care of no more. Here's this fork.
There's a story after the incident with Duke. She tried to leave New York. She was on a bus that in the country roads. It was a primarily black bus. It got ran off the road by a group of KKK members. And they dragged out the black people off the bus. They beat some, hung some. And then she was raped repeatedly by the KKK. So after that, she basically was like, all right, well, I'm not going to leave New York. I don't know. After that, she just opted to go back to New York also. She ends up back in New York, and she goes, starts dating a drug dealer named Ed.
Have you heard of the church? Have you heard of somewhere other than, like, where are you meeting these fucking dudes, man? Stop meeting these fucking dudes. Yeah. He sold drugs. Like, I get it. You don't got a lot of options, but son of a bitch. Well, why the drug dealer? You done processed your ass through a pimp. Like, why go to the drug dealer next?
Being poor and sexually abused, she probably has low self-esteem.
Yeah.
And probably...
Don't you go making sense, goddammit. I'm trying to teach her.
Of shit. Well, no, she definitely... That's what I was saying. Like, you know, a bunch of languages and shit? Like, go do something out. Like, find somebody. That's crazy. And now she's like that beaten dog that, like, escaped the house, then got hit by a car and was like, well, I'm not leaving the house anymore. I'd rather just get beaten.
I'm just going back to New York. Fuck it.
Yeah. That's crazy.
So she stays with Ed, and Ed's slinging drugs, so she helps him with his business, and she gets pretty good at it. So she starts taking her own money off the side, she learns how to run a business, and she learns that she doesn't really like Ed as much as she thought she did. She eventually saves up her stash on her own. She goes out there one day, she tells him, she's like, all right, well, it's been real, but I'm about to go out and start my own thing, so I'm done here. And Ed tried to strangle her.
Big surprise, like... Dudes of that period of time probably didn't like their old lady standing up to them that much, especially the drug dealing type.
Yeah. She was a big, tough girl, though, and she fought him off. He ended up cracking a skull on a table.
Damn.
He eventually ended up dying of the close head injury.
Fucking Madam Skullcracker should have been one of the goddamn names, apparently. Holy fuck, I wasn't expecting that. I mean, I know you said she was a tall lady, but... I wasn't expecting her to fucking go cracking skulls and shit.
So she takes her money and she goes out on her own. She becomes a boss of a gang called the 40 Thieves. And they were primarily robbers and extortionists.
Oh, 40 Thieves. What, was Alibaba one of them?
So she starts her fucking gang. And it was weird because it was actually an established gang. And she kind of just took it over. And she realized she had a knack for leadership. She was charismatic. People fucking listened to her. So the second she started, like, standing up for herself, the second she started telling people what to do, they just fucking listened to her. She's like, well, all right, from now on, fuck that.
And if they didn't listen, she started speaking a different language, and then they figured out. Well, I mean, why would you start your own gang when there's already a collection of 40 thieves?
Yeah.
Like, might round up my own. I can just take these 40.
We heard she stabbed a dude in his eye. I'm like, all right, well, none of these 40 thieves want to experience that, so they're going to listen.
All right, she stabbed one dude in the eye. She killed another motherfucker, cracked his head off a table. Like, that's a tough way to die. What'd she do, shoot him? No, she cracked his head off a table. Ugh. Smashed his skull in. So eventually, as she becomes a little bit older, she gets a little bit better. Her gang gets a little bit better. She makes some more money. She starts looking for smarter rackets, and eventually she takes her illegal earnings and invests them in the largest growing racket in Harlem, the numbers game.
There seems to be a lot of numbers games in Harlem.
Well, it just all kind of popped off around that time. And basically, the numbers game was focused on poor communities. And there was Italian Harlem. There was Spanish Harlem. There was a lot of black dudes. All the wealthy people had kind of fled the area at that time. They had white flight. So Harlem was a lot of just poor people of different ethnicities. And the lottery, as you mentioned before, preys on poor people. So it was the big game. So it was just a race to see, you know, who could make the most money off it, because everybody literally had a penny. So that's why the numbers money is such a big racket. It's not because there's a lot of people making huge bets. It's because everybody's making small bets. So kids on the streets, ladies, everybody had got a quarter, a nickel, a penny, and you're just racking in this money end over end. And it was the growing thing. So I would say the numbers racket in Harlem is the same as Prohibition everywhere else. The problem was most of those rackets were already moved in on. So it was a more expensive proposition to find a distributor, get a truck, ship it in, make it in your bait, whatever you had to do to come up with the alcohol then to sell it. Or this number thing, you could just basically pick it out of the air. You know what I mean? You just have to have a number and the money and you're good to go. So she jumps in the number game. And then with her business sense and fearless attitude, she quickly becomes one of the largest numbers bankers. Through the 20s, she grows to a point where her only primary rival was Casper Holstein. We covered him on the last episode. Now, there was all kinds of other numbers bankers, and they were all making a bunch of money, but she was not only the only girl, so she probably wasn't making the most, but she was making more than any other females were in the crime industry at the time. And she really kind of embraced the lifestyle. She stayed in an expensive building in Harlem. She wore expensive dresses and furs. She wore like extravagant hats and like multicolored turbans. Like she bought the most expensive clothes from all over the world. They say she was making probably about $250,000 a year through most of the 20s.
Damn.
I was just, when you start naming off like all the things she was buying, like I was like, yep, just a chick with money, just buying all that. But then when you were going through it, I was also like, well, yeah, that's exactly what all the dude gangsters do too. Like they buy nice clothes,
like expensive shoes, fucking yeah. Fancy cars and shit. It's all the exact like same.
As soon as you're a gangster, that's what you buy: is fancy cars, fancy clothes.
If you watch Goodfellas, there's a whole scene. He shows up at the door like, "Hey, mom, look it. How do I look?"
And so yeah. Far, she's got a leg up on old Casper because she'll crack the skulls herself if she has to.
And so Stephanie St. Clair gonna have to choke a bitch.
She will if she has to, apparently.
Give me my fork.
Give me the eye fork. Give me the stabbing fork.
Where her only rival was Casper Holstein, that was kind of like they competed over business, but they didn't even gang war like that. It was more just like how businesses would compete. You know, whether, you know, like you're just.
They were on each other's Twitter talking shit.
Right. It wasn't gang wars in the street. They just didn't run business like that. You know, they're all running business, so.
They're doing different coupon deals.
That's exactly what I was going to say. If you want to try and get their customers, you're not just going to go start cracking the heads of his runner. You start being like, hey, we'll do...
I don't want to play the numbers at all right? Fuck it.
Right, that's exactly what they didn't want. So they just be like, hey, we'll give you 10-1 today if you want to jump over. Just like all different right. Fucking... So it was a business rivalry.
Flash sale.
And then they both had one big thing in common is that they both had a big interest in the Harlem Renaissance. So she was also big on putting money back in the community. Now, she was a little focused on doing it different. Like, she also donated money and helped out, you know, the community and stuff. But her big thing was providing high-paying jobs. So she would pay all of her people top dollar. So her runners, she paid a high... She gave them all money, but she also gave them a percentage of however much they brought in. Okay. So if you were a great runner, and you got a great route, and you're getting people to pay a bunch of money, you make a little bit more than the guy down the street.
Good incentive program.
At one point, some of the other businesses were looking at getting rid of the runners and trying to do it out of storefronts, where they were telling people, well, you just come to the storefront and do it. And she said, nah, we're going to keep those jobs. We'll make it simpler for the people, but this is where they work. You know, I have a crew. I got employees and shit. Like,
other motherfuckers are putting in self-scan. She's giving her cashiers raises.
Damn straight.
And she donated money to programs that promoted racial progress. She was also big on putting out ads in local newspapers. So she learned pretty early that, like, if you had the money, you could buy space in a newspaper and you could just print whatever you wanted in newspapers. So she was printing a lot of articles, educating the Harlem community about their legal rights. She'd advocate for voting rights. She'd call out, like, police brutality against the black community. She'd just write big-ass articles and put them in the paper. And they're like, hey, they ain't trying to tell you this, but if I got money,
yeah,
so I could tell you. They're not allowed to beat you in the street like that. Here's a lawyer's number. You can call them.
Just in case you didn't know. And that's so fucked up because at that point in time, people needed to be told that shit. Because at the end of the day, humans will take whatever authority hands down to them. So I guess what I'm saying is somebody needed to tell people that at one point in time. I mean, they fucking still do, but at that point in time, even more than now.
Well, yeah, that was decades and decades before Miranda rights. Like, that was long before people knew, like, hey, you know, you can just not tell the cops things. No. Like, hey, that's a thing. And they're not allowed to smack you when you don't tell them things. No, yeah. It's great. Harlem policy runners are the biggest philanthropists. Can we just let the policy runners, like, run our government? Can we just do that?
They seriously are, though. So we've looked at multiple dudes, multiple cities, you know, multiple races, different genders.
It's crazy that that market was that huge to where the diversity was that broad that we had dudes that could have been running our political systems, running fucking numbers and shit.
And technically, if you look at even Ken Edel was there. Ken Edel was a guy that still was, even on a lower scale, even later in the game, just working the poor communities, running the numbers, not kind of a gangster.
People love the fuck out of them.
Yeah.
People love the fuck out of them, right?
And I mean, to clarify things too, and to go a little more on our political high horse, is it's the people that ran it when it was good. Then the mob came through, ran it like shit, started fucking everybody over. And then what we're saying right now is what happened because then the government stole that shit from the mob. And policy runners do run the country now, but they're not the cool, good policy like the old school Harlem ones giving back to the community. It's the stiff arm, fuck you, pay me mobster style of business that runs the country.
So this is actually my favorite part of the story. She early on, she got in trouble for some stuff, and they sent her down to the police station. She talked to a lawyer, and the lawyer said, look, I got this guy you got to go talk to. Just bring, like, an envelope full of money. You know, and he kind of just brought her into the loop of paying off people. You know, so she was never really that type. She, like, I know this isn't a term we're supposed to use, but she was referred to as uppity. But it really seems like one of those things where she didn't take no shit. Like, so she didn't really like white people. She didn't really like dudes, and she didn't take shit. And it's one of those things where...
So she would love us here in this room right now.
No, we got your back.
Well, where a dude that does the same way, you're like, oh, he's a badass, huh? He don't take no shit. Yeah. And if a female does it, you're like...
She's stuck up.
She's bossy.
Yeah.
She's a bossy bitch. Yeah, get it, fall in line and shit.
Fucking get in your lane.
Well, and she had also... Even though she had her abuse situations, she had came from the French islands where... The black people had been free much longer than they had in America. So she didn't have this inherent assumption that black people or that white people were better than her.
Yeah.
She didn't think that. So she didn't get that. So she didn't take a lot of shit from them.
And when she came here, we were still fucking in the thick of that. So yeah. I can get it.
So they're like, hey, look, here's what you got to do. Take some money and go start paying off people. And then you don't have to worry about this shit all the time. So she does that. She starts making all these different payments and shit, paying off people. She ends up paying over like $6,000 into different cops and judges and just, you know, paying off money regularly. She's like, okay, I'll get on the program. How much money I got to pay out? So they're like, I don't know, some here, some there. So she starts paying off everybody. And then she starts having issues. Like she got her house broke into. They wouldn't help her. People are still busting her runners sometimes. And she's just still having all these issues. So then she starts trying to complain to the people that she's paying off. She's like, look, I'm paying you off this money. And my guys are still getting arrested. You still raided my fucking place. I can't even... My place got robbed.
Yeah. What the fuck am I paying you for? Yeah. This is dumb.
So then they start saying, like, well, you pay us more money. You just keep paying more, and then we'll help you
like
more.
It's like some ESPN Plus shit. You gotta subscribe to ESPN Plus before you can give them $60 for the fucking pay-per-view. Like, wait, what?
Yeah, you just bought the right to talk to us. You bought the right to pay us off for this a crime
later. Fucking
NFT
fucking ESPN Plus shit, man. What the fuck?
So... And she gets pissed and she starts trying to report to the authorities. And she's like, well, hey, I'm a crook and I'm paying these motherfuckers money and they're dirty and they still ain't helping me. And then they're like, you know, most of the higher ups are still dirty at some level too. And they're like, oh, I don't want to hear about that shit. So they just blow her off. Eventually, she gets pissed and she starts running articles in the paper exposing all the corruption. So she starts printing like newspaper articles about how these fucking dirty cops are all taking all this fucking money. In the meantime, they're still... fucking beating us in the streets and shit.
Oh, shit.
So they didn't like that.
No, of course.
No, that would tend to kind of bum them out.
Yeah.
So at one point they tried to tell her to stop and she doesn't respond well or shit like that. And she just keeps raising a fucking fit. And eventually they ended up arresting her on trumped up charges because she was actually pretty good at her shit. So they couldn't catch her on anything she actually did. So they just fucking slapped some shit together and fucking arrested her. She was able to fight most of it off, but she got sentenced to 8 months in a work camp on Roosevelt Island, and she was fucking pissed.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
she's
yeah.
Like, no, I fucking paid these people off. And, I mean, even for the dudes, it doesn't work out that way sometimes. I mean, even the small players that fucking buy into the system, pay their dues, they sometimes get fucked, too. I'm not saying it was any different just because she was a female. I mean, I almost guarantee it was because she was a female. But I'm just saying, there was some small-time dudes. And, however small-time she was is irrelevant. She obviously wasn't big-time enough to where these guys were worried about her. Even if she was cracking skulls. She just didn't have enough, I guess, momentum behind it to where whatever she was paying off mattered. She needed to have some more juice behind her, I guess.
And she's just in a demographic where it's easy to blow off.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, it is what it is. It's going to be a lot different if you try to behave that same way with Meyer Lansky. There's going to be some different pushback on it.
Yeah.
Well, up to this point, there typically would have. So they're just used to kind of treating people of color like that. Like whether you're black or Cuban or whatever the fuck. They're like, yeah, whatever. Fuck off.
Yeah.
Thanks for the money. Fuck off. So she gets out of her work camp and she finds out about a police investigation. It's called the Seabury Commission. And it was like this big investigation, which they were still at that point investigating Tammany Hall. It was this senator, like Sam Seabury, I believe his name was. And they were still trying to tie up all the corruption in the New York political system. And they were still looking at Tammany Hall. So Stephanie St. Clair was like, well, hey, I typically don't snitch, but these motherfuckers are all dirty and they took all my money and I didn't get my money's worth. So I'm willing to tell you what any of them fucking did.
All right.
So she went in front of the Senate Commission and she testified on every single one of the people that she had paid off that didn't participate in the corruption. So the people that took her money and just were cool, she didn't say shit. But everybody that fucking took
stern
her money.
But fair.
Based on her testimony after the... Well, not... They had her testimony, which led to other evidence. At the end of the thing, the mayor ended up resigning. And then a police lieutenant and 13 other officers were all relieved from their jobs. All
right.
Word.
She gets what she fucking pays for. All right, guys. Don't you offer corruption and not return it.
Here comes another classic Duke snitch breakdown. I don't even see this as snitching. Like, we all know I hate people that rat people out, but, like, this isn't it. You paid for a service, you didn't receive that service. This is basic customer service. Like, it's the same way with homeboy that did everything he was supposed to, did everything he was told, went to jail, and then the big thing is, if you're a worker, you're part of the family, a big part of the payback is, when you're in jail, they'll take care of your family, they'll take care of some shit. He went to jail, they said, fuck you, he got fucked over, all this sort of shit. So, yeah. He ratted them out because they weren't, you take care of your workers. She's out here taking care of her runners and shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you pay the cops to tell, to not bust your people and your shit's still getting busted. Yeah. If you got money, get them fucking ads in the papers, blow up their spot. I'm the sort of dude, I will cut off my nose to spite my face. Even if I'm ratting myself off, on doing some illegal shit, if I paid you and you're the cops and you're supposed to be like illegally protecting me, you know, fuck it, I'll burn this old motherfucker down, Pookie.
Damn straight. Let's pretend she was into dope. She took on a big shipment, maybe on the front, maybe she put half up, maybe she was supposed to put the other half up later, and it got taken from her. Now, the people who supplied her with that, they're not going to concern themselves with the intricacies of who took the fucking dope or whatever. They're still going to want their money. She wanted her fucking money. She wanted what she paid for. They didn't give it to her. I mean, that's fucking tried and true from the top to the bottom, whether you're a supplier, distributor, in her case, whether she wanted what the fuck she paid for her bribes. So, I mean, who can fucking fault her? you know what I mean?
And I ultimately love that her go-to weapon was the news. Like, I have money, and I can buy fucking ads, and I can put whatever the fuck I want in the news. So, fuck you, cop.
And that's what's great about that, too. Like, the newspaper, right? Like, the cleanest. Oh, we're just journalistic integrity. Like, we're just here to give the truth out. And they're like, but we will put whatever the fuck you want in the paper for some cheese, though. Like, you want to spread some dirt on this fucking guy who didn't give you what you bribed for? Fuck yeah, we'll run that ad.
That sounds like good news. That sounds like it'll sell some papers.
Damn straight it will.
When it comes to the game of power, there's two things. There's money and muscle. And both are tools, and you got to know how to work it. Like Casper, he had no muscle, but he had money. But he just got jumped and fucked up or whatever. She knows how to work her money to her advantage. She knows she don't got much muscle. She's not going to go to war. Like, we mentioned Lansky. If he bribed some cops and they didn't do what he said, there's going to be some bloodshed in the street. There's going to be a couple shots fired, a couple cops down. She's not doing all that. Instead, fuck it. I'm going to just get these ads and fucking use my money.
I will fucking give me a microphone. I will yell it from the mountaintop, motherfucker. Yeah. Dirty ass fucking Irish ass cops.
Yeah. And I'm all for it.
Fuck you, motherfuckers. All right, so I guess this would be a good spot to take a break. So we're going to take a quick smoke break, refill our drinks, and we'll be back in a minute.
Shackles to break out of. They cower, solo but mob them, and they crowd us. Spilling in the street with heat like hot lava. Pop bottles, molotovs tossed, and rocks follow. Ominous disciples like vipers, they strike quickly. Come at me like an army, I'm tearing you down with me. Spit like a baron, rulers of bread like Kaiser. Roll with the goal and get beaten like outsiders. These amateur animals swing in the wrong jungle. Climbing the wrong vines mean these lions will snuff you. Concrete wilderness building our own structures. Fighting our own. For survival with rivals with throat punches. Sorting them. Court of honor corroded as soon as it was awarded. Celebrations were thwarted before they could be supported. Rolling thunder bombarded them. Flaming dark put a part in them. Separate and disarm them and send the bulls to the parliament. Operation Niagara, Viet Cong and the battle with. Landmines and grenades and flamethrowers to scatter them. Dear mama, this battle is harder than what we thought it'd be. Every part of me scarred, I'll be recognized when they mortar me.
Yeah. zone with all your guns, defenses down. Flashes everywhere, the lights create an atmosphere. Water in your lungs, you pray for death, but life is here. You're about to die, face it, you're about to die. Zero sand in your glass, fuck it, you can't even cry. Put a dagger to your neck, just to keep yourself in check. Put a dagger to your neck, just to keep yourself in check. Everybody grab a side as you fight to stay alive. Dancing on a hand grenade so you can die and they survive. Silver bullets in the sky, dropping 7-second death. Scattering the children, run, rub until there's nothing left. Ashes in the water, sons and daughters holding flags up high. Wallow in the harbor as the military tanks arrive. Penetrate the border with disorder like an animal. Every war has the honor of turning kings into cannibals.
We're back.
In the saddle again.
Thank you for this chocolate porter from Big Leg Brewing. Big Leg's on the west side of Michigan, Holland. They're kind of like a medium brew. They're a medium brewery.
Hey, is it a medium?
They
would you say it's a medium brew?
They're like a medium-sized brewery.
I mean,
they distribute throughout.
I wouldn't say they're small. Right. I wouldn't quite say they're large.
They're not
somewhere in the middle.
They're not like Holmes Brewery where you got to know a secret handshake to get their fucking beer and shit. Or there's like three party stores that are all family owned in the city in which it's brewed that gets to distribute their shit. Big Lake, they go to Myers, Kroger's, fucking they don't give a shit. They'll distribute. They got good prices, but they're still independent. And that's what I dig about Big Lake. But yeah, that's what I'm drinking on, this chocolate porter that Locke shared with me.
I'm sipping on a podcast classic, you know it, you love it, Boss Tweed, from Old Nations, which, once again, Michigan beer, from Williamston. I almost said Williamsburg, but it's a Stin, not a Berg. Don't get it mixed up.
I got these milk stouts from Left Hand Brewing. It's a nitro stout. I've been drinking a lot of these nitros and shit. I, like, poured it into the fucking glass. It looks dope. It's a much lighter stout. So when we left off, Stephanie St. Clair had, she kind of overcame a life of getting kicked around to become one of the top numbers bankers in Harlem. But eventually she learns at some point she is like a female all alone, you know.
And she better know her place.
So she starts looking around and she pays top dollar to bring in one of the top numbers enforcers, Bumpy Johnson. Bumpy Johnson was a young kid that had been working for others, numbers operators, and he showed a lot of promise. So a bunch of the stuff she liked about him. For one, he was a really good gangster. So he's good at that. He was a tough guy. He was a muscle guy. He was good at that. But he's also really smart. So she caught him reading a book one time. It's called The Black Phalanx, which is a book about like black soldiers in like American history or something like that. And
Denzel Washington and Glory.
The Glory Tier.
Yeah, he learned all about the Denzel tier.
Well, and she was like, she had knew the book, and she asked him about it, and he said, you can borrow it if you want. I've read it a couple times. It's just one of my favorites. So she really liked him. She's like, the guy knows his shit. But they also had in common, he had like a just a typically insolent behavior to white people. He just wasn't a fan of their bullshit, and she really liked that in him. So she was like, well, he's tough, he's smart, and he don't like white people. And I'm kind of on that train.
How can I blame them?
I guess I should rephrase it. It wasn't that he didn't like white people. It's more that he didn't take shit from white people. He didn't walk around assuming like, oh, well, I need to shut up and watch my mouth and let you treat me a certain way. So it wasn't that, you know what I mean? He just wasn't.
Well, it's just however people want to feel about the idea of systematic racism or whatever. Back then, there was definitely systematic racism, no right. matter what, if not just outward racism. So even though, as a white man myself, I don't like the fact that they like they just hate white people, but I get it. I understand why they would, because the whole system is so it's not even that they hate white people, individual white people. It's they hate white people as a whole, as representative of the system that they're fighting against.
Just a bunch of white guys fixing racism. That's, yep. That's what the world needed. A bunch of 40-year-old white dudes. We'll fix this.
All of our minority listeners, tweet at us. Did we get racism right?
We fixed it, right?
If you somehow can figure this out from the deletion of the fucking cut that this will be, then let us know.
So the queen starts to teach Bumpy the business side of crime. And she'd also expose him to culture. So she'd take him to the theater all the time. She'd make him see operas and plays. She'd give him books to read and stuff. She also taught him dress extra fancy. I mean, he always dressed all right. I mean, he was a gangster. But as close as he got with her, he was a good enforcer. And he ends up, over the next few years, he spends like 6 months out of prison. Like, he just starts getting popped for shit. And he, like, get out and then gets popped right away. And so he starts going in and out of prison in the next few years. And then during this time, as we've already covered in this season, Dutch Schultz decides to take over the Harlem racket. Dutch is a big-time Jewish gangster. He starts moving in. And they take to the street. They're beating runners. They'd use their political connections, have them arrested. They'd have safe house raided. And most of the Harlem bankers folded right away. Stephanie St. Clair was one of the only numbers bankers that decided she didn't want to give up. So she was like, fuck that.
So she's the tough teddy of Harlem.
Yeah.
I had it wrong. It wasn't Casper.
Was she depicted in that movie at all?
Hoodlum?
Yes.
Yes.
She was. Was she the Caribbean voiced woman?
Yeah. So she's supposed to be French.
That was my favorite. That was one of my favorite characters from that movie. But that's just interesting to know that was her.
Yeah, that's her. So Tim Roth was Dutch Schultz. And she was the queen.
Yep.
And Lawrence Fishburne was Bumpy.
Okay.
They made her a lot more.
They did.
Like West Indies, with a thick accent.
Yep.
So she actually prided herself on being French. If you asked her where she was from, she'd respond to you in French. She spoke perfect French with a European accent. So she would sometimes say she was from Martinique. So she'd sometimes say she was born in actual France. But no, she sounded very French. But yeah, so she's the one. She says, no, fuck that. And what she did know was, even though Dutch Schultz was kicking the shit out of everybody now, she knew that Bumpy was coming out. So she basically told her people, like, look, fuck that. We're not going to give up. She was only able to scrape up a few people. Like, so everybody else folded right away. So Dutch Schultz came into town. A couple people got beat up. A couple people got arrested. And they're like, yeah.
Casper fucking gave in and shit.
Alex, everybody rolled. And they were like, nah, we're going to fight. And they're like, nah, we're not going to fight. So she was able to rally up a gang until Bumpy got out. So like the two things she kept telling people, she said, I'm a woman, I'm going to fight. What kind of men leave a woman alone in a fight?
Damn.
And that would always just rally a bunch of dudes. Like,
By default.
Fuck, I guess I got to go fight.
You can't get punked
How
out.
Can you? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can't be a manly man if you're going to let her say some shit like that, right? Men?
See, fucking sometimes.
Man up. God damn it. God I should have came. I knew I should have come.
Fucking God damn.
See, women, sometimes sexism can work in your favor. It's in the way that you use
Make
it.
Make them a bunch of sandwiches and then tell them they're bitches if they eat them and don't fight after.
Yeah. Oh, you're just going to eat the sandwiches and not go to war. Mm-hmm. I get it.
Whatever, pussies.
Mac's boyfriend would have went to war. And her other big one was, she said, why would you guys agree to bow down to this white man?
Yeah.
One of these two is going to work.
Yeah.
You're going to leave a woman to fight alone, or you're going to bow down to the white man. She just rolled them both out there. So she rallied up a gang, and then Bumpy eventually gets released from prison. A guy that he came up under was working for Dutch Schultz. They met when he got out of prison. He said, yeah, I'm actually just going to go with the queen. And he said, well, that means we're going to see each other out there. And Bumpy said, yep, I'm hoping to see you first.
Oh, damn.
I think Bumpy honestly just has loyalty to her. I think he would just always have her back.
Right, because she had his. I mean, he was in and out. He said 6 years. That's a long time to stand by somebody.
Well, especially if their ideology is the same. Because he's not just fighting for her. He's fighting for his community. He, like, wants the black community to rise up. So he's fighting for his home, his community, and everything.
Like you were talking about earlier, one thing that he had going for him, what we always say these guys should do, he was taken care of. So when he was in prison, she always had his legal fees, she took care of him. So he would have got out and had a choice. If you hadn't been looking out for him, he'd have been hitting the streets and like, hey, you know, this Jewish dude's paying us to just go do regular shit. You know what I mean?
Open agent. Yep. You know? Yeah.
That's why some people, they take advantage of the fact that they got workers and they'll just shit on them and they'll still keep on coming back. Like, no, when you take care of them, that's how you guarantee loyalty.
So Bumby goes to the queen and she sits down and he's like, look, here's what we got to do is we're going to put together, like, we're going to lose this fight. So anybody that sides with us, we got to pay them well. We need some money. Like we said, we need guns. We need legal funds. We need, you know, like a salary. You can't move numbers at war, you know, so we need to like pay soldiers and stuff. So they go on like a campaign and they go collect the money. So they go talk to like the local businessmen. She's like, we're going to fight the Dutchmen. So she just went out on a campaign collecting money to fight Dutch Schultz. A lot of the policy holders like Caspar Holstein, Alex Pompez, a lot of the guys that sided with Dutch Schultz that handled over their operations still chipped in money to like fund the insurgency, I guess you call it.
Yeah.
So she collects a fund and Bumpy rallies a little army. And they don't have a bunch of dudes, but they're down. And their game plan was basically they figured they just they're going to have to fight the war in Harlem. And Bumpy's thought was, Bumpy told him, you can't tell us apart, but we can spot you real quick. Like the second you come into Harlem, we know who you are.
Damn, that's cold, but it's true.
So they go to fucking war. And then anybody that would sell out to Dutch Schultz, they go smash up their business. So,
yeah.
Wrong team.
Yeah, you're going for the fucking big guy. We'll hit you where it counts. Fuck it.
Stephanie St. Clair, she'd like post in the newspaper like stories about like his operations and where his like business.
Still holding that angle and shit.
Like she called and told the police on him. The police raided a place and he had $2 million in there. And Dutch Schultz was so fucking pissed because he's so cheap and that was like a lot of money. And
they're like, Hell yeah, it was just fucking $2 million. All right.
$2 million cash.
$2 million, that's at least $20 million. Yeah. At that point in time, that's at least
$2 million cash.
Yeah. He's fucking pissed. Fucking A, Dutchie's pissed.
But yeah, so that's basically how they fought it, just guerrilla style. And they took a lot of losses too. It was tough on both sides. They were basically losing the war. They were just kind of figured it's like the Vietnam approach. Play spoiler. Like we could lose it for longer. They were fighting for their neighborhood. So they were losing, but she had extra money because even though they weren't making money, she took a fund and she already had money. So she was willing to die on this hill. She was like, no, fuck it. I'm not backing down and shit.
Like you said, it was their neighbor. I mean, at a certain point, there is no like, well, we're not retreat. There's nowhere to retreat. Left. Like this is the fight. Like, there is nothing. This isn't like a fight to an end game. Like this is just. And, man, we're not going to let them take over our neighbor. This isn't like.
Where else would we go?
You're losing the fight. Yeah, we're fighting. That's like winning, losing, whatever. It don't matter. I will say, I don't know how I feel about her just snitching Dutch out to the cops. Because I have no problem if you're the businessman and then something happens or whatever the fuck. But you're in the middle of the gang war. Mm-hmm. You have Bumpy on your side. You have officially joined gangster side of things. And I also get the ratting out on the paper against the crooked cops, the guys that you paid for. For me, that's all fair game. But to be in the war with the gangster, and then you're just snitching out to the cops, ratting his shit out. I don't think I support that move. I think this is the move I'm against.
That's been justified through decades and centuries of La Cosa Nostra. I mean, it's to snitch to the cops on your own side is a no-no. But to snitch to the cops to create an advantage against...
That's still they're snitching on your enemy. That's like,
but it's been proven, like, right, that it's not as looked down on you're using it to get a leg up on a rival gang member.
No, it's still a blood snitching to the cops on a Crip. You're still snitching.
I don't know.
No, that's the whole aspect of snitching.
Hasn't it been okay, though? I mean, all right.
If you're a law-abiding citizen, you can go to the cops. Once you're a gangster and you're in gangland, you don't go to the cops no more.
And I'm 100% with you.
Don't sound like it, Tank.
Let me finish is all I'm saying. Like, so as I've been on the show, I thought it was black and white, black being the cop side, white being the fucking gangster side. But then I found out that it seems to be more like, as long as you're using it as a competitive advantage against your rival gang, fucking this family against this family will rat out what they know about the other family to the feds, as long as it will get their family.
No, that's snitching. That ain't right.
But isn't that kind of how it's been? All right. I mean,
I have never been supported that, and I don't think mafia people have ever supported.
Really?
They will support.
I mean, within going their own family, whatever. But no, against still a rival mob, family,
yeah,
they haven't supported that.
That's still mob shit.
All
you
right.
either take it out mob style. Right. What they have done is went to crooked cops and bought out crooked cops to go do more legal shit.
Well, I might just be confusing myself. Is all I'm saying. No. I thought that it was acceptable, as long as it was to gain competitive advantage against a rival family.
No, anytime anyone has ever gone straight to a cop and just straight snitch somebody out, they have been extradited from the gang scene. They are essentially state evidence.
All right.
You're a piece of shit.
So, I mean, we have kind of covered this. I was going to let you guys sort this out amongst yourself for a while.
That's cool.
But so we did cover it. It actually,
at one point, he looked at his phone, I think, too. He's like,
I was looking for a name to quote.
I'm just fucking around.
He was looking for a precedence. We both laid out our case. Now he's going to do the judgment.
All right.
It really depends on generations. And DC, he's got actually a good take on this, and he knows a lot about it. But it really depends, and it's different situations for different gangs, and it's also. The reason I say different situations, different gangs, is like on the street, it's exactly what you said. So like right now on the streets, Bloods versus Crips, the exact same situation. Yeah, you do not snitch on each other. You don't talk to the cops, period. It doesn't matter whatever they're saying. And then there's a guy we follow on Instagram now. He follows us. He does gangster content. It's E-Cuzzo, and he talks about that. So when he was in prison, he did a long time in solitaire because he wouldn't snitch on a rival gangster. And eventually the other gang said, well, he doesn't know, let him out. But that's kind of on the streets now. But like on the mob level, at the higher level, Lucky Luciano and Meyer Lansky were pioneers in weaponizing political connections to arrest anybody for anything. And honestly, they learned that from Arnold Rothstein. So Arnold Rothstein kind of taught them, like, hey, if you got the connections and you're paying for them,
well, that's what tell. I thought.
Well, like, see, right it. There. No, right there. You bought those connections, whatever. Doing crooked cops that's paying for a service. That's not what she did. She bought out the paper shit and was just dry snitching
just
out there. Was just ratting him out.
Technicality, but I got you.
Yeah.
But I got you.
But I even that, it. Even though it has been, there's the precedent, and I even... We'll go with the caveat of once you're paying crooked cops, that's a service you're paying for, all that sort of stuff. I still stand by what I said, that is a very fine line of going to competition or not going to the cops to shut down your competition instead of just. But it's also one of those things like kicking in the nuts, like every dude would be like, no, that's not. But if you're in a street fight and shit is going down, I mean. Am I going to kick you in the nuts or am I going to let you punch me in the face? You know what I mean? At the end of the day, sometimes is it right, wrong, whatever.
I'll bite a motherfucker. Fuck
that's
you.
What I'm saying. Like, it's easy to be like, yeah, you don't pull hair, you don't bite, you don't do all that. But when a motherfucker's got his arm, when a motherfucker got his arm all the way around your fucking neck and you're going down, whatever.
I'm biting. Fuck it, I'm biting.
So I am against the snitching, but at the same time, if you're fighting for your neighborhood, you know how to take this motherfucker out. I mean,
right? And we did cover they are losing too, so it's like fucking everything. Yeah. All hands on deck. Man.
I'm not. That's why I said I don't know how I feel about this. I am in general against it. However, I understand the move. I get it.
So by 1935. He's like the Axis powers, you know, he's Germany. So he's fighting this war on way too many fronts. So he's got this IRS thing. He's fighting for the numbers war. He's arguing with the commission, and he just has a whole bunch of shit going on. He starts too much trouble. And eventually the commission ends up setting up a hit on him that has nothing to do with the war in Harlem that he's actually winning. So he's winning this war, but he's just got a bunch of shit going on. Eventually, the queen, she can't even really support the war anymore. She hands over the whole gang to Bumpy. She's like, I don't know.
Oh, damn.
You want the gang? And Bumpy's like, yeah, I'll take the gang. I'm down.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
No problem. I was in the clink a fucking year and a half ago. Yeah, I'll take
it. Got it, boss.
Yep.
Thanks for the
gang. Well, I think at this point, it became just straight up more of a gang warfare thing. Like, she was in charge of it when it was policy numbers and all this. But at this point, it's just a straight out, like, you know what? This is just straight gangster shit.
So to what you're saying, at one point, she had to run into her cellar and one of the help had to cover her in coal because, like, assassins were like in her house and trying to fucking kill her. There was an incident where a guy attacked her in her house and she was able to lock him in a closet until her bodyguards came.
How dumb did that guy feel?
Well, and she seems scrappy though, right?
And I was just preaching about this last episode, like, get you some backup, get you some muscle. And you know, at this point she was like, all right, I've reached my limit. It's time for Bumpy to step in. This is my muscle. This is what I recruited him for. This is what I paid him for. This is what I, you know, helped him through when he was in the clink for 6 years and shit. So I can dig it.
You're the man, Bump. Yep. Let's see what you got.
Here's your tag in.
Not long after that, though, so she hands over the gang. Dutch, eventually, he ends up getting shot at the Chop House in New Jersey. It wasn't related to the Harlem Numbers War. It was a commission thing. He had fucking butt heads with the National Commission too many times. And that's how big he was. That's why he was able to take over Harlem, where a lot of people hear these guys folded. Yeah, he was like butting heads with the five families. He was a big time gangster. So he was good at this. But eventually that all caught up. So he's just eating dinner one day and they come up and they shoot him.
And I mean, that's how it goes, right? Like, they're like, oh, that's cute from afar. But once you reach critical mass, the Piper's gonna fucking call, right?
And really, that goes to show how big the mob was at this time, that he's taking over Harlem. These other people are, like, fighting for their lives, like, we need to save our community or whatever. Like, the five fam was like, yeah, we don't give a fuck about any of that shit. This is completely different. It has nothing to do with
them. Finally sorted this out? Like, thank you.
Crazy how much they don't give a fuck at all about that whole situation.
And we'll cover, like, the Dutch Schultz hit. There's a little bit more on it, I think, on either the Pittsburgh Phil or the Red Levine episode. Because he was a Murder, Inc. hit. So he was seriously sanctioned by the five families.
Yeah.
Bring in the guys. The hitmen actually got in... The hitmen that killed Dutch Schultz got in an argument afterwards over a guy that took too much extra time trying to rob him. And he's like, that's not part of the work, bro. We got to get out of here. You're fucking going through his pockets. That's bullshit. That's not what we're doing. We're professionals.
Get your... Diversify your bonds.
Hey, I'm with it.
Get out
like
of his
it.
Pockets.
We're not petty fucking muggers. We're here doing a professional hit. We just took out this guy. Like, he's taking over Harlem. He's a big name guy. It's fucking Dutch Schultz. I'm going to say here... fucking with his pockets. We're trying to be smooth here.
Somebody got lowballed on their job offer, huh?
Like, we're not working for tips.
Dutch was hit at the Chop House, but he lived for, like, I think for like 48 hours afterwards or something. And the Madam Queen, while he was on his deathbed, sent him a telegram that said, as ye reap, ye shall sow.
Damn. I knew it was going to be some gangster shit like that. Girl. As ye reap, ye shall sow. That's like 1930s, like, fucking cold, like, kicking you to the bone shit right there. Like, that's some Bible fucking, that gets you right there. As ye reap, ye shall sow.
Yeah, I probably went over that complete. They're like, what's it say, Dutch? No, I don't know, something Dutch. This broad's talking about sowing. I don't know.
Dutch was different, right? So I think that got him, man. Hey, that's just in Tank's mind. That got him.
After the Dutch Schultz War, Bumpy's now running the gang. She decides to focus her life as an activist for political reform. She married a political activist named Sufi Abdul Hamad, who was a converted Muslim. Some people call him the Black Hitler because he was very anti-Semitic.
Damn.
And that's actually where he started to lose most of Harlem. Like, everybody's with him. And they're like, yeah, we like him. Black power. And he's like, and we'll kill all the Jewish people.
Well,
that's... And they were like, well, hold on. What?
Wait. So you mean hate with hate? Yeah. No.
Well, that is a whole underclass of it, where the Hoteps.
Yeah.
Of the black community, black people that they don't. It's something crazy. Like, some of them don't even believe Jewish people are the real Jewish people. Like, their bloodline was eradicated and they're not the real. That black people are the real Israelites and stuff. Like, Nick, there's Cannon. A whole. Yeah, there's that whole subsection.
Yeah, Nick Cannon.
It started by Hoteps. Yeah, started by Sufi Abdul Hamid.
I know the black Asiatic Hebrew. Whatever, like, RZA, fucking Wu-Tang.
Yeah. Like, I was trying not to drag Wu-Tang into this.
I know, man, but at that point, it's like, once you start that, fuck it. You know what I'm saying. Orange whip.
That's Tink's new I'm sorry. You know what I'm saying.
You know what I'm saying.
He used to just apologize. Now he's like, fuck it, you know what I'm saying.
And Locke told me that the hardest part of him editing was at the point where his boys were like, and you know what I'm talking about, because I've just become that person. I'm now one of those guys.
What you're talking about.
You know what I'm saying. I don't need to stop this nonsensical shit with something that makes sense.
I need to wrap this up with a point.
Yep. You know what I'm saying.
Just cramming words together.
Fuck. Sorry, guys.
Oh, now we're back to the classics.
Everybody loves the hits.
Back to the tracks from the first album.
No more two episode.
Fuck those B-sides. Yeah. I want the hits. I want I'm Sorry Tank.
Freebird.
I gotta get this on track.
All right. Good luck.
So, Sufi Abdul-Hamid, he starts cheating on her with, like, some lady that was like a tarot card reader or something. And, he tried to steal some of Stephanie's money to start a business with this tarot card reader and shit. So he finds out, and they get into an argument. And in January 1938, she ends up shooting him 3 times.
Damn!
He lived, though. He's okay. Oh, he lives.
Shit.
But so he lives, but she was sentenced to 2 to 10 years in Bedford Hills Correction Facility for Women. And she was released in the early 40s. And at that point, she retired from public eye, I guess you would say. She's able to live out the rest of her life quietly as a successful businesswoman. And she continued the rest of her life to write for local papers about racial discrimination. I don't know if that means she actually wrote for other papers or she just bought ads and papers and wrote what she wanted for the rest of her life.
Probably just like a second.
Help wanted in the classifieds.
Interesting.
Wanted a stop to racial discrimination.
In search of social equality.
Damn.
John Craigslist and shit.
Yeah.
Chance encounters. Equality. Oh, fuck that.
Misconnection. Me and social liberty.
She died still wealthy in 1969, just before her 73rd birthday.
Man.
Her death was not reported by any major news outlets at the time.
If she would have died 30 years prior, it would have been in every...
front page news.
Yep. Sure. But at that point in time, she had spiraled into obscurity or whatever.
Well, it was the bumpy show. Yeah. She's the Big Jim Colissimo that handed the gang over.
Hey, whatever. I mean, mission accomplished. She said she was trying to get out of the eye. Way to do it.
Yeah, I fucking left the crime gang, shot another husband, did a little time. I'm really ready to wrap this up, man.
Another husband.
Like, I mean, Black Widow. Like, that's a thing, right?
I mean, it ain't like she's just out there fucking up husbands. Really, one tried to pimp her out.
Yeah.
They all earned that's it. One tried to choke her.
Tried to steal from her.
I mean, when your husbands are that guy, then fucking they get...
Fuck them. Yeah. You get lumped up.
Black Widow them motherfuckers, man.
So that's the story of Stephanie St. Clair.
So say goodnight to the bad guy. Come on. The last time you're going to see a bad guy like this again, let me tell you.
So, obviously, she was portrayed in Hoodlum. I don't got a picture of that. So who'd you cast to play Stephanie St. Clair?
I don't know. You can't go wrong with the Regina King. She's good. She's a good classic. Jada Pinkett Smith, I think, could play her because she plays a gangster as Fish Mooney in Gotham. Scrappy. But I'm trying to think of a black actress that could play off being like the French, like with the French accent and everything. And I keep on thinking about the lady she was in Black Sails. She plays the French black prostitute. But that's all I've ever seen her in. And I think I just keep on picturing her because she does like the French accent or whatever. I mean, she's a good actress. I think she could play the role real good. But she just keeps on popping in my head. I haven't seen her in anything else.
Is that Jessica Parker Kennedy?
Yeah, her. Yeah. She could play it. I would say, all in all, though, I think I'd just stick with Regina King.
It's hard to go against Regina King. I mean, she's pretty dope. Well, here's a picture of Stephanie St. Clair. Well, this is our youngest picture we have.
Oh, you know who could play her? Thandie Newton.
Thandie Newton, yeah.
Alicia Keys.
Alicia Keys, yeah, I like that.
Holly Berry could probably play a good one. But no, from there I'm getting a Thandie Newton, maybe Zoe Saldana.
I'd already known, like I'd always seen the pictures of Stephanie St. Clair. But I think like Aisha Tyler, you know, she's tall.
I was thinking Kerry Washington too.
Kerry Washington, yeah. I just know Aisha Tyler is like 6 foot tall.
Yeah.
So now we got to do the DEFCON scale. So the standard DEFCON scale is 5 to 1. 5 being the lowest, 1 being the highest. But on the Bad Guy podcast, there's no good guys. So 5 would be Lee Murray, who's your drug dealing, kidnapping, bank robber. And 1 would be the Purple Gang, who's got multiple gang wars, multiple massacres, and they kill people on the streets. So on a scale of Lee Murray to the Purple Gang, where would you rate Stephanie St. Clair?
Even though I'm hammered, I still got to give her a 5. As much as she was slightly more gangster than Casper was, I still put her in the same realm. She handed off to Bumpy, no matter how they portrayed her in Hoodlum. She wasn't as gangster as Bumpy was. Slightly more gangster than Casper was, but not enough for me to elevate her past a 5. What do you think, Dan?
Oh, yeah, 5. I mean, I really don't have much to say. I mean, it's 5. How can it not be a 5? She stabbed a few people, shot up the one dude, but neither one of them died. She had a good reason. And I mean, really, compared to the latest 5s, yeah, she's more gangster than Casper and shit, but like, she wasn't nearly as gangster as like Teddy Rowe or nothing. But yeah, she's 5 all day. She wasn't bad.
I'm going to say I would have went with the DEFCON 4, but you guys are both probably right. But ultimately, that'd still be a majority decision, DEFCON 5.
That's right. It's going to the streets. Hey, y'all. It's revolution up in this bitch. Set the alarm, DEFCON 5.
All right. Well, this is Say Hello to the Bad Guy. Thanks for coming, and thanks for listening.
Say hello to the bad guy, bad guy. The good guy coming last place. You smell that dope when I pass by. I let my money at a fast pace. Say hello to the bad guy.
Down bad, my mama had to be dad. Spent my birthdays in the trap, we had to work with what we had. She been working on a raise while trying to raise me like a man. Plus my daddy in the box and all my cousins in the cam, man. And I don't need 100 friends, I just want 100 bands, 100 jugs, 100 scams, ay, ay. So I done money grabbed 100 hams. Said out of money, grabbed a bunch of bands. And I ain't wanna fall victim to that system or the pistols. Fuck a judge with a grudge, I'm blowing crud for my mental, ay. And I still keep it on me, run and tell your big homie before you meet your dead homie, ay. Yeah.
Say hello to the bad guy, ay. The good guy coming last place. You smell that dope when I pass by. I let my money at a fast pass. Say hello to the bad guy. Bad guy. Guy coming last place.
Ricochet in the fast lane. Let my money at a fast pace, look like a drag race. Control re-up in my ashtray, I'm in my bag. Hey, good girl, bad face, slim waist and her ass fake. Hey, and she in love with the bad guy. But bad bitches never act right. Hey, she act up until that bag fly. I did a turn around in one night.
Say hello to the bad guy. The good guy coming last place. You smell that dope when I pass by.
I lay my money at a fast pace.
Say hello to the bad guy. The good guy coming last place. Smell the dope when I pass by.